Hello, everybody, and this is Rick, and you're listening to the Affair Recovery Library EMSW and EMSO call on the 22nd of September 2014. Really excited about this week. For those of you listening to this, our new boot camp will go live on Wednesday the 24th. I hope you'll check that out. Even though you're already a member of this, I believe you'll find it something you might be able to refer to your friends, so please take advantage of that. So, the first question for the day. Since the discovery of my husband's affair, I find him truly repulsive. He would fly down a college girlfriend every month and meet her at a hotel for sex. Looking at him makes me queasy as I see him as a sleazeball and liar. He is truly remorseful and is willing to do anything to save our marriage. We have small children, and I'm trying to wrap my head around his disgraceful behavior. I fear that I can only see him now as the slime he has been for the last 2 years. I can't imagine ever seeing him in another light. Is that normal? Discovery was 4 months ago, and I found myself wanting to just keep my distance from him. So one of the things I notice in your question here is that you call him a sleazeball, you call him a liar, you call him slime. In a cognitive distortion sense, what that does is it's called labeling. And when you use labeling in a situation like this, it's almost like you objectify him, and all you can see are those words that you say. It's like those words paint him completely as a sleazeball or slime. It is normal in the beginning to feel this. Typically, people, though, over time begin to recognize really good qualities. It may take a while. But to start that process, you need to quit using those words and at least say something on the other side of those words. If you say he's a sleazeballs, you also would add, but he's also, you know, a husband, and he's also a good worker, and he's also this. I mean, it's like just adding a positive characteristic about him is going to be something that helps you begin to shift that feeling. But it really does begin by shifting those words. If you call him slime or a sleazeball, you will feel as if he's a slime or a sleazeball, and it will blind you from seeing other characteristics about him. One exercise I have people do when they've got that negative lens and they can't get the negative lens out of their mind is I have them begin writing things and observing things that they can actually appreciate about him. In fact, I will have a couple put a piece of paper in the bathroom and draw a line down the middle and put his, hers, and each day you have to write one thing you appreciate about your mate. I suspect in hearing this, there's a part of you that goes, there's no way I'm going to do that. I'm not interested in doing that. But if your goal is ultimately to be able to be with him in the future just because he's remorseful and he seems safe and it's for your children's sake, you're going to have to do the work at shifting that negative filter in your mind. I know that puts it on you, but all we can do is be responsible for us and work at being safe enough for the marriage. If you're interested ultimately in finding contentment in life, I'm afraid you're going to have to do this. Next question. The EMS weekend my wife and I attended was truly remarkable, raw, and transparent. This was the first time my wife has ever admitted to doing this repulsive act. It might have been a one-night drunken stupor, which she had exposed and let her minor children witness, but I still have a hard time understanding the lack of respect for her family and me. It's been a few months since the act occurred, and we still live apart, but interacting as we both settled on saving a troubled marriage, she says she wants a new marriage as I do. And it seems as some old responses to these acts have robbed the flame and scared the heck out of me. It seems she wants to lessen the effect by just saying it was only this, and she treated it as though it was a year or so from the affair. It seems as if it would be easier if alcohol were to blame for these passive-aggressive outbreaks. I'm wondering if she's truly willing to do anything to restore our new marriage. I think she's willing not to drink to keep us together, and if she balks or says anything different, I'm not sure I can stay in the marriage, as it might blow up again, and I don't want to accept excuses anymore. What do I do? Letting her know that it feels at times that she minimizes this and is almost taking back part of what she said during the EMS weekend would be a place to start if you haven't done that already. Another thing I would suggest is talking to a marriage therapist so the two of you can discuss it objectively and it doesn't become a flooded conversation, but you can at least stay rational and she can look at it. Oftentimes, because of our shame, we have this tendency to minimize, especially if our desire is to be in the relationship. Paradoxically, however, that's the worst approach you can take. So I would address this if you're considering on addressing the marriage, and I think that she needs to figure out what she needs to do, as do you, whatever it's going to take to save the marriage, hopefully. That will help the two of you as you move forward. Next question. We are in Married for Life, week 6, the protest polka. I find that we frequently engage in this manner of argument. Unfortunately, the portion audible part becomes inaudible about halfway through the video. Can you please comment on the steps needed to address this manner of argument? I think the best approach in addressing many of these cycles is to both agree that this is a problem and that it needs to be addressed. Second, if there's an agreement that something needs to be done, you need to either name the dance the two of you do, give it your own name, or you can use the protest polka. And every time you begin to see this particular pattern start, somebody say, oh, we're doing it again, here's the protest polka. Or if you notice after the event that this has occurred, you go, yeah, we just did the protest polka. One thing to do when this begins is a do-over. So you say, let's have that conversation again to see if we can talk about this without doing the protest polka. Another solution is to sit down and instead of talking about that topic, share how you felt during that particular conversation. And it's not about the content, it's just both of you, as we were talking, I felt unimportant, I felt dismissed, I felt disconnected, whatever the feelings were. And then have the other partners, they listen to your feelings, tell you how it makes them feel over the fact that that's how you did feel. For instance, may say, I hate that you felt that way. That's certainly not what I intended. And then reverse the process. Have the other party share how they felt during that dance. Typically, just understanding each other's hearts is a great way for the two of you to begin to reconnect. Our next question. We've completed EMSO. After living with the infidelity in our lives, I am worried about a friend of mine. Her husband is a doctor with large blocks of time that are completely unaccounted for. He goes out of town to conferences, unaccompanied by his wife and two toddlers. He recently hired a very sexy and beautiful office manager who is a newlywed. He stated that he needed to hire somebody who was beautiful in order to help him with marketing the business. she found flirting text messages on his phone from a nurse at work who admires him and frequently works with him. She was upset and threatened to walk out. He cried and told his wife it meant nothing and that texting only happened once when he was drunk at a conference. I'm worried that there could be more. Should I say something? How do I approach this? I think it's difficult to assume somebody's doing something. I mean, I know that where there's smoke, there's a fire, but you also don't want to stir up something in somebody else's marriage. I would just be a good listening ear if she wants to talk about it and encourage her to stay engaged with him and supporting him. You can also just be there in case something does happen, or you can even ask questions of how she's handling her concerns or fear as a result of reading those texts. But I think being supportive, especially if she knows you've gone through difficult times, allows her the comfort, I think, of coming to you if something else comes to light. And I believe if something is going on, eventually it will come to light. You just want to be there so that she can have support if that occurs. That's our last question for the day. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. And I hope you guys have a good week, and I look forward to answering more questions next week. To healing.